You know I'm right, the podcast that uncovers the origin stories of some of the biggest names in media, sports, entertainment, entrepreneurship, and so much more. Nick Durst here, along with Joe Calabrese. And Joe, we're excited for our guest today, continuing the trend as of late of getting a lot of authors on with us. I know you are a huge, avid reader, so
I am.
Our guest today, his book to your reading list for this year. Why don't you let me know who we have with us this episode?
We'll start with the fact that he recently, within the last month or so, had a book come out. You could order it on Amazon and anywhere you get your books. It's called Trailer Park Parable. He has served in the United States military and served in the Air Force, and known for his, I guess, YouTube channel, Zeducation, right? So somebody we're very happy to have on. Little bit of mix of everything, but welcome Tyler Zed to the show. Tyler, how are you? Thank you for serving. Appreciate it. You get to talk about the book soon. You get to plug the book, but how are you doing today?
Good. I appreciate you guys having me.
Tyler, just curious before we really get into this series, do you have a particular favorite DJ?
A favorite DJ?
Yeah.
I don't have a favorite, no. But you know, the first one I think of is DJ Pauly D, of course, right?
That's a great one. But there's another one that comes to my mind. Joe, you know where I was going with this one?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this one. Just say the joke.
Zed.
Zed.
Oh, okay. Well, he's got two D's.
Man, right.
Oh, yes. Still, yeah.
It's all relative. But yeah, DJ Pauly D, guy's a legend. Big fan of the show, by the way.
Big fan of the podcast, follows the show.
Really?
Actually, know people who have hung out with him and met him before. Somebody that I used to work with before we started the show, Nick. I was talking to Tyler about our experiences at our previous work stop. And somebody I used to work there, I used to do production for the Jersey Shore show, and he knew everybody. So he was very close with Vinny. He was very close with Pauly D, very close with Snooki. Actually attended Snooki's wedding, but they were all really, really nice.
Little fact, Snooki and I married at the same venue, at least
that's right.
It's at the same place.
Nice. Are you guys both in Long Island? Is that what I saw?
Joe's in Staten Island and Jersey City. I'm in Staten Island.
So okay, I guess they're not too familiar. Yeah, Jersey, I've been out. I think I've been out to New York City one time. So
you're not missing much.
In recent years, it was the streets were not as clean as they used to be. But lately, it's gotten its act together again. It's fun to be here. But obviously, you're not from here. You're from Minnesota. So let's talk about you.
Let's go, Joe Mauer, Hall of Fame.
That's right. First ballot.
Our Hall of Fame. Barely first ballot. Very, very deserving. The Land of Lakes, hockey, the hot state of hockey. Nick and I love hockey, but you were born in Minnesota. And I don't know how to pronounce your last name properly, but you were born Desmond
Janicek.
Janicek. Okay. Yeah. I would have had it.
About a 10% hit rate. So, like, I've heard it said 1,000 different ways.
I can see people not pronouncing the J properly.
So I don't know if you guys read the book or not, but in the first chapter, I talk about basic training. My instructor, he couldn't say my last name to save his life. So he would call me Janicoos. And I was like, I don't know how you got Janicoos out of Janicek, you know, but whatever, I'll go with it.
So you obviously, you grew up in Minnesota, you're used to the cold, the winter, and you're a big sports guy. You excelled for the Brainerd Warriors. You were just dominant in football. You were great in baseball. So tell us about your upbringing there, playing those high school sports.
You must have found some old articles or something. I don't know, because grew up playing sports from a very young age. That was obviously a super important part of our lives. I mean, we lived at the baseball field in the summertime. We lived at the hockey rink in the wintertime. So yeah, huge, huge part of our lives. Played all the way through high school, and started in college. I went to St. Thomas in Minneapolis, well, St. Paul for a year before I decided to join the Air Force. And I started playing baseball there. And then when I decided to join the Air Force, that was the end of that. So yeah, huge, huge part of our lives, sports, obviously.
Did you get to play pond hockey growing up? Some frozen ponds, frozen lakes?
So I always like to tell a story. I have a scar right here on my left eyebrow. You probably can't see it right now, but it's from a hockey puck. We were playing. I just gotten my license the year or the summer beforehand, so I was about 16, almost 17, and we're at the hockey rink in the middle of a blizzard. There's like a foot of snow already, and we're out there shoveling the rink ourselves because the attendant was too lazy to go do it himself. And it's a lot of snow, so we're out there skating, and we put the net down because we didn't have a goalie, so we'd shoot at the top of the net. And I shot mine. I missed. Skated around the back of the net, and my friend, who's a pretty big guy, shoots the puck pretty hard. Shot his right as I was behind the net, off the pipe, and right into my face. So I got a 12 stitches and was driving to the hospital like this with one eye. But so yeah, got a couple of reminders of the good old days.
Sounds like a hockey player to me. All I know is if we got a foot of snow in New York, everything would shut down immediately.
Didn't you guys just get that?
Yeah,
We
we
had a
had a
couple of
better
inches here and
attendance,
there.
yeah.
I mean, for the most part, the last 2 years, it hasn't really snowed as much in this area. It was a big deal a couple of weeks ago when it snowed for the first time because we had gone a really, really long time without it. But yeah, I mean, we got 10 inches apparently in the city just because the ground is heated up a little more. Like sometimes it doesn't nearly stick on the roadways, but there we've gotten blizzards through the years where we've gotten 18 inches of snow, 20 inches of snow, 2 feet of snow, and it just shuts everything down. It is a disaster. Whereas
Well, I'm not
snow over there for
surprised.
you is just part of life.
Oh yeah, we used, like growing up, you'd sit and watch at 6 a.m. like just please, school canceled, school canceled. You'd watch the bottom line, right? And then we get 2 feet of snow and we're still going. The only time we would get it canceled was when it was like 20 below Fahrenheit and the
Right.
buses couldn't drive because it was too cold for the diesel. So, oh yeah, we're used to the snow. Not like Buffalo though. I don't know how many times you guys go up there, but.
Never been. Hope to go there someday soon
What?
though.
Well, I
Cousin went
suppose
up
New
there.
York's a lot bigger than you really realize. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Oh, it's
probably
gigantic.
but like Buffalo is from us to like 5.5, 6 hours.
Probably a little more, I would say. Yeah, about 8 hours, I think. Yeah, my cousin went up there for a Bills game earlier in the year, last year rather. So he enjoyed it, loved it up there. Hopefully, we'll be able to go to at least a Rangers game or something in Buffalo one day soon. But back to you. We want to talk about your time in the Air Force. You mentioned it already. So your decision to eventually join the Air Force, how did that come about for you? Was it your own decision? Were other people or friends of family or friends influencing you or nudging you in that direction in any way? And talk to us about being in the Air Force and being a medical technician.
Okay. That's kind of a long story, I guess, but my freshman year of college, I did well. I think I got a 3.2 GPA, but I got that first tuition bill and I wasn't able to make ends meet. And obviously it was a smaller private school, which was not the best decision on my part, but I found that out quick when that tuition came due. So I was $4,000 short, and that's when in my head I'm like, wow, is this something I want to do every single year? Do I want to have to figure out how I'm going to make these ends meet and then have this pile of debt afterwards for possibly 5 years of schooling? And that's where in my head that's where the idea started to look into the military. And then at the same time too, it's like, okay, I feel like I need to do something that I'm proud of, something that's important. And I felt like that is absolutely worth doing for anyone, if they decide to join the military. You're serving no matter what you're doing. If you're in combat, whether you're stationed in Texas or California, wherever, you're sacrificing your time, and I think that's honorable. So I thought that in the back of my head that that was something I should probably do. And then obviously add that financial sector for college. That's what ultimately made me decide to join. So then I joined, and I waited, I think, until the next, that following. So I got done spring of 2010. That following fall is when I started the process of going in. And then the following March, because I worked as a ice hockey rink attendant for the winter, which was an awesome gig. Then March of 2015 is when I flew out to join the Air Force. And I remember, here's kind of a funny story. I know you guys like sports. So one of my The guys that I ended up being really good friends with in basic training, We didn't sleep like that whole night. We just sat and talked about baseball. He was a huge Braves fan, so we bonded over that, and we kind of like kept each other's nerves at ease talking about how great, the Andrew Jones and Chipper Jones days were, and what the Twins could have been, this 20 game losing streak that it ended up being. Obviously, it was. So we didn't sleep. That next morning, we get on the plane to fly out from Fargo, and we were supposed to fly to Colorado and then to San Antonio. And as we're on the taxiway to go take off, smoke fills the cockpit. And I'm like, in the where we're sorry, not the cockpit, the whole plane. There's like smoke on the top of the aisles. So they cancel the flight. And in the back of my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, is this a sign? Am I not supposed to be doing this? This is a terrible sign. Anyways, they delayed the flight, and that following day we flew out and ended up going to basic training for the 8 weeks in Texas, and was assigned as a medical technician. And in the Air Force, it's there's a wide range of things you can do as far as being it's a the designation is a 4NO, the AFSC, AFSC, so aerospace medical technician. But you could end up working in a pediatric unit, just like a regular clinic, family health unit, or you could be like I was stationed, or I was assigned, my first duty station was flight medicine. So we were responsible. Our clinic was responsible. It's kind of like a family health clinic where, you go in and you get your annual physical and whatever. But we were responsible for everyone that flew in the Air Force. Anyone that had flying duties, whether you were a pilot or an engineer, whatever the case may be, if you had to fly for your job, you had to come to our clinic. And we also saw their family members as well. And another huge part of that flight medicine aspect was we have an ambulance, and we respond to any emergency that is on the flight line. So in the middle of the day, you'd be seeing a patient, and you'd hear the phone ring, and it'd be an emergency, and you'd have to go see what the emergency was. Generally, it was like an engine was out on a plane that had four engines, so it was not a big deal. But occasionally, you'd get a crash or an investigation that had to be conducted in a situation like that, which is obviously not good. So it got pretty intense at times, for sure. And so I did that for 2 years, my first 2 years, and then I ended up finishing out my Air Force time as in a family medicine clinic. So it was pretty calm. Took care of a lot of veterans, active duty members, their family members. So yeah, the last bit was a lot calmer than my time in Japan. I don't think I mentioned that. So my 2 years as a flight medicine technician were in Okinawa, Japan. So then I finished that. I ended up getting off or getting out in March of 2015, and then I started going back to school. Went to the University of Minnesota for about a year and a half, and then after that, that's kind of when I started dabbling in YouTube and social media stuff. It was always just kind of a hobby. Just something to do and stay creative and exercise that part of my brain. And then, as I was doing that, going to school, I got an opportunity to go to a training for air traffic control. So I did that for about a year and a half. I was training to be an air traffic controller in Oklahoma City, and it's kind of like the military in that you don't really get a say where you go. So I finished the training and then ended up going to Oakland, which was I guess, my assignment, my duty station. And then while we were out there, my wife and I were there for probably close to a year. We just decided we didn't want to be away from family here in Minnesota, and we made the decision to move back. I had to give up my training position as a controller. I would have probably had about 3 years of training left. So I mean, it wasn't even guaranteed that I had a job. So we left there and ended up moving back to Minnesota, and that's kind of where YouTube just kind of took off, and that's where we are today, like 5 years later.
So how did you come up with the Tyler Zed moniker? And when did you really kind of launch this education YouTube channel? How would you say that has kind of morphed from what you started it as to what it is now? And is that pretty much, what you're making your living off right now, the YouTube channel?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, okay, so my name. My middle name is Tyler, and my Dez is what people call me. So Zed is Dez backwards. So thought it was kind of clever. And obviously, you asked how you say my name. It's not easy to say. So I was like, yeah, let's make this a little shorter. Let's make this a little easier to say. So that's how I came up with it. And then how did Zeducation start and where was it from where it started to where it is today? It's definitely a lot different from where it started to where it is today. But as to how it started, it started out actually as I was writing satirical articles with a friend, and we were kind of, playing off the Onion and now the Babylon Bee, if you guys know who they are. So we were writing stupid, funny articles like that. It was called The Garlic. And I had another friend who was very active on social media, and he was more into current events and stuff like that. And he saw what I was doing and asked me to, do a couple things with him. And next thing you know, we were making funny videos, and this is all pre-Zeducation. During that time, this was probably 2017, 2018, he kind of took a different route. I always wanted to keep things light. I wanted to be humorous with things I created, even if it did have a political slant. I didn't want people to, I didn't want to, I didn't want people leaving my channel with their blood pressure through the roof. And I didn't want people, I didn't want to add too much to that rhetoric that's already out there. And it's a fine line. I know that happens sometimes, but anyways, he took a different path. I wanted to keep doing humorous videos, but still talk about important things. So I created Zeducation in the fall of 2018. And I never had the goal. I think everyone has a goal to continue to grow, but I didn't foresee what it became. But it was always a hobby. And my goal was just to create videos that people wanted to watch, and then always try to make something better each video. That's I don't know if you guys listen to Mr. Beast, but that's one thing he always preaches. If you're gonna make videos, always pick one thing out from the previous video and say, "Oh, I'm gonna focus on this next time." And that's kind of the mindset I had, and it just took off. And it was definitely more focused on current events when it started. But now it's kind of more pop culture, current events, internet culture, obviously memes and TikTok, stuff like that. So yeah, it is, if you anyone that has watched it from the start, you can definitely see the transformation.
So
And yes, I do this full time.
very nice. So would you say there was a certain period where the channel really kind of took off and accelerated growth wise? And really just how surprised are you now at this point with the success the channel has become?
I'd say I'm very surprised because I feel like I said, I've always viewed it as just kind of like a creative outlet, something that I have to do. If I'm not exercising that part of my brain, I just don't feel like I'm fulfilled, I guess, if you want to say. It's kind of a weird thing, but I am surprised because I'm reacting to, like I said, internet culture, memes, stuff like that, and it's gravitated. A lot of people like it, people enjoy it. So it's kind of surprising that it's awesome to get to do it every day. And when did it explode? I would say when I started the You Laugh, You Lose series, which is the Sunday series. People absolutely love that series. And it's not too in your face. It's lighthearted. And I think people enjoy that. I think people want that relief. That they enjoy it, obviously. So that's when it really started to take off. And now we're really close to episode 200 of that. So that's almost 4 years of that series every Sunday. So, and I think I missed two Sundays, which were times I was fishing. So.
That's great. Nick and I are approaching episode 300 with this show. So we know the process it takes to put everything together and to do it consistently. So the fact that you're seeing remarkable consistency and success with this is terrific. Absolutely agree with you there. Let's talk about your book, because before you mentioned that this kind of all started with doing goofy article writing and more short form article writing, right? So there's a noticeable difference between just kind of getting like a short form, whether it's serious or satirical. There's a difference between writing shorter stuff as opposed to writing longer stuff. So your book, I mentioned at the top, Trailer Park Parable, a memoir of how three brothers strove to rise above their broken past, find forgiveness, and forge a hopeful future. Released in paperback, according to Amazon, on January 30th, 2024. So, not too long ago here. But I want to talk to you about the process of writing a book, allocating time for the book, right? Because when you're writing a book, there's an extensive process behind it. It's like you got to write every day. There's the process of editing stuff and going through the publisher and all that, and all the little things along the way to get it published, right? So explain your process behind writing the book. Where did the motivation come for it, and ultimately how it got published?
Okay. So I have to go back a little bit even, and this is kind of in the book too, but going back to when we were kids, we were always very, very creative. We were always making movies. We were always trying to make cool things, things that we liked and things that we were proud of and things that we wanted to share with others. So we always had that as a part of us. We always wanted to make cool things. That's, you know, and we wanted to make things that we're proud of, like I said. So like I said, it goes back before the satirical articles even. So I actually wrote a novel when I was in the Air Force, and multiple screenplays. And it's just something that like I said, I've always had to do this. I just, even if I don't, I just feel like I'm wasting this, creativity that I have. So I've always, when I was in the Air Force, I spent a lot of time doing that, and I would make a goal. I had this calendar. So for anyone that writes, I think it's so important. Like you said, this process, you have to figure out a process and you have to stick to it. And you guys know this with a show. Like if you skip a day, you skip a show, it's easy to be like, ah, well, we'll skip the next one too, or oh, we'll, yeah. So just like working out, you have to do that with writing. So I had this calendar where I would try to write 500 words every single day, whether I was doing a script or a short story, whatever I was working on, I had to do 500 words a day. And if I didn't, and then I would mark an X on the calendar so I could visually see it every single day. And if I didn't, like I got this, it just felt bad. It felt like I was failing myself. I felt like I wasn't practicing. I wasn't getting better at writing. Because I have all these ideas that I want to do, but I know that in order to do that, I have to become a better writer. So it started back then. And I wrote this novel. It was probably 70 or 80,000 words, and I was so hopeful with it. It was kind of a satirical, if you know, if you've read Catch 22, it was like a modern day version of satire on the modern day military. And I was so proud of it, and I sent it to like 10 agents a day and publishers, and I got out of like 200 or something that I sent, I got two requests for like a chapter, and they both passed on it. And it was just this, it's the feeling of dejection, right? It sucks. It feels like, felt like I failed. You know, it's like this thing's a piece of crap. I spent literally hundreds of hours of my life on it. And then I kind of just gave up for a little bit, almost a whole year of not creating anything. And then that's kind of when the satirical articles came about, because I met another friend named Daniel, and he sparked this creativity again, and we started that site together. And then this story, this Trailer Park Parable, that has been something that I felt like I've wanted to share with people for a very long time, because it's a story about you know, childhood trauma, addiction, but also overcoming that and dealing with it. And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. Everyone, you know, for better, I shouldn't say for better, for worse, but sadly, tragically, we deal with this all the time. Addiction, you know, whatever you want to say, fentanyl, opioids, it's a very big part of our society, unfortunately. And I wanted to share that story just because I feel like sometimes with when you talk about current events or anything, it doesn't feel as positive as it, you know, you want it to be. And I wanted to put something positive out into the world, and I think that this was this book. So it was, I think last year, 2 years ago, I made the same exact commitment to myself, as I did with that calendar. Instead of a 500 words a day, I wanted to write 1,000 words a day. And I had an idea of how I wanted to structure the story. And that's what I did. So for the next 2 months, that's what I did every single day. I would do my YouTube stuff in the mornings. In the afternoon, I sat down, I blocked everything out, I turned my phone off, and I wrote 1,000 words a day. And then I reached out to an agent, and obviously with better luck this time. So she loved the idea. She read the first three chapters. She helped me edit it, and then we, her and I, put together this package, some sample chapters. So what the themes are, who the audience is, the target audience, stuff like that. And then she went out and she sent this package to publishers, where ultimately we landed with Post Hill Press, who ended up publishing the book. So yeah, getting to see the whole process was kind of a dream, honestly, because this is what I wrote this book, 5 years ago. That was a failure. And I dreamed of seeing how this whole thing would play out. How could I get people to read my book? How could I find an agent? How could I find a publisher? How could we get it into stores? Like, that's every writer's dream. So to see this play out was great. And I think the most important thing with it all is seeing how people have responded to it so far. It's been pretty overwhelming, and in a positive way. So yeah, it's been a great experience.
Yeah, now that you have this book out, those other agents from 5 years ago are going to be coming back to you now. Hey, you want to come back, come out with this book now that you have success, and we're on a YouTube channel.
It's
Would you pitch
behind
them?
you, isn't it? On the bookshelf?
This is the book, yes.
Yeah, show us. Get a close-up of it. There you go.
There we
There we go.
go.
You guys see the sandals, the socks and sandals?
Yes.
Oh,
Trailer
yeah.
Park, the Trailer Park style back in the day.
So Tyler, in your life or your career, what would you say is your you know I'm right moment? What I mean by that, it's a time or place where you wanted to pursue something. You asked somebody for advice. They said, Tyler, that's an awful idea. You don't want to do that. You were like, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to follow through with this. I think it's going to work out. And in the end, you will see why it is that I'm right.
Ooh, that's a great question, and I know exactly that moment. I actually have had this conversation a few times this past couple weeks. I remember starting YouTube, and people, friends, distant friends, who they weren't necessarily rude to my face about it, but there was this vibe, this I could tell, like, oh, what are you guys doing? Like, what are you? That's so silly. You're putting your face out there, and you're making these silly videos. What are you like? Why are you stupid? Are you, don't you care about what people think? And I remember those people specific. I remember, I'm not going to say who they are, obviously, but those people who thought it was silly. And then now, come full round, when there's more than 1 million subscribers, and the book is, I would say, so far a success. Again, people have liked it, and those same people absolutely, reaching out and wanting to be a part of it in a way. Oh, congratulations, this is amazing, this is awesome. And it's like, okay, well, I appreciate it, but you didn't always think that. And I kind of have lost a little bit of respect for you, and it's not how friends should treat each other. If this is what I'm gonna do, you should say, all right, well, I support it, I'm your friend. So I guess that, yeah, recently, that's this, I've had that moment. I'm right. I like that.
It's our basically, I told you so, or I got you moment.
Yeah. I
There's a
have to say,
debate there.
I don't ever say that, just because, but in the back of my head, yes, it's like, yeah, I told you. I told you so.
Well, you're at millions of subscribers now, and for a lot of people, it takes a really, really long time to get there. For you, it took a couple of years, a little hard work, doesn't hurt. But Tyler, we appreciate your time. We thank you for your previous service. We all have people in the family who have served before, so we thank you for that. We wish you the best of luck moving forward with everything, your YouTube channel. Definitely would like to order a copy of your book. So that's
If you
something.
guys want, I'll send you one. I'd love for you guys
Really?
to read. Yeah. Could you
Autograph.
make?
Yeah, I was gonna say, put like a little, you don't have to think about it. Just like a little note and a
Autograph.
signature. I mean,
Dear
I would
Joe,
freaking love that.
love being
Yeah.
on the podcast with you. Keep up the good work. Yeah,
Yeah. No, honestly, I appreciate you guys having me, truly. Like, I think you guys are one of the first shows that reached out. So yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me.
absolutely. And there's room for collaboration in the future. So if you ever want to to do a video with us. You know, two New Yorkers, we're here. But Tyler, we appreciate your time again. Thank you for your service. We wish you the best of luck with everything. Everybody go water his book again, Trailer Park Parable, a memoir of how three brothers strove to rise above their broken past, find forgiveness, and forge a hopeful future. He showed you the book. Go water it. But Tyler, we appreciate your time. And if there's anything that we can do to help you along the way, we would love to. Next time in New York, let us know. Nick and I know the best places to get food around
Not
here. So if you
Buffalo,
want to, not Buffalo, but if you want good
though.
Italian food or good pizza or something like that here, you know, like I said, the next time you're in New York, let us know. But what we do here is, well, we always give our guests the last word. So if there's anything else you could think of that you haven't already that you would like to share or promote, by all means, go ahead. But we thank you for doing this with us again.
What you already said, I hope you guys check out the book and I hope you'll enjoy it. I think there's something for everyone in there as far as you know, valuable things to think about away from YouTube and the views and the subscribers. I think there's, you know, real, truly important things. Not that that isn't, but when it comes to our families and stuff like that, so that always comes first. And I hope that that's what gets across in this book. So I hope a lot of people read it. And again, thank you guys for having me.
Tyler, thank you much for so much for joining us. That's going to do it here for this episode of You Know I'm Right for our very special guest, Tyler Zed, for my co-host, Joe Calabrese. I'm Nick Durst, and this has been You Know I'm Right.